You are a market leader operating in a highly competitive industry where efficiency and tangible results are paramount. You have a small and dedicated marketing team focused on executing regular marketing communications that must deliver immediate, measurable outcomes. You need a marketing partner that can seamlessly collaborate with your team, ensuring swift and frictionless execution, all while achieving quantifiable results in real time. My name is Tyler Chisholm, and as the co-founder and CEO of Clear Motive Marketing, we can help. With over 15 years of working with clients exactly like you from across North America, we have the team, the skills, and the processes to deliver the marketing that matters to you. Reach out to me on LinkedIn or check out clearmotive.ca to learn more.
Hello and a warm collisions YYC. Welcome to my guest this morning, Mr. Doug Downs. How are you doing, buddy?
Hello. Good, man. How are you?
Really good. Thanks for coming on. I can't even, you know, we already joked, we can't talk about the weather because we're in the same city. But we, Haley Daniels, is that who introduced us?
Against yeah.
She's a rock star, so I'd love to give her a little mini shout out here.
About energy. You and I were both, you know, bantering about energy in a podcast. She is a ball of energy. Have you, she been on Collisions?
She was on They Just Get It way back at the beginning when she was on her, this was a local who was an aspiring Olympic athlete at the time, just an amazing, amazing young woman, had her on the show and she introduced us. So I always love getting shout outs because Calgary is biggest small town ever, one, and two, 1 degree of separation and someone's going to introduce you to somebody. I think it's, so one, of our, it's one of our superpowers.
She has collided. Is that the term we use you for know guests what? On this Delicious, podcast?
Absolutely. How do we bang some cool ideas together and see what happens? So yes.
Get them a mug. I've collided on YYC.
Yeah, I love it. Stories and strategies, podcast productions. Let us into the tent. You know, I'm on your website, which I'm a professional low-grade creeper. Podcast production for influential brands, people, corporations.
Yep.
Talk to us. You live and breathe. You have a broadcast background, and you clearly embrace and love the world of podcasting.
Well, Tyler, it all began when I was 3 years old.
And my mom gave me a microphone. the old Fisher-Price microphone.
She did. And that is where it started.
That's amazing.
I used to run around. My dad was a Hockey Night in Canada fan. And so my family had a tape recorder, which is sort of the equivalent of, it's not even the equivalent of a video camera anymore.
It was a different world, Doug.
It was a different world.
For the kids that are listening, we're not even going to bother explaining it.
No, I had a tape recorder with a cassette and I would run around the house and I would do hockey play by play in the little tape recorder. And my mom would always make a big deal out of that. And it stuck with me. And so when I got to high school, I just knew I was going to get into radio. I did. Got into radio. It doesn't pay. So I got into TV, which pays a little better. But the stuff that you see now where broadcast media is following what newspapers already done and taking a real nosedive here.
Yeah.
I saw that back in the 90s. So I went corporate, did my public relations, did media training. Became a consultant eventually once I felt I'd learned a thing or two. And at, you know, about 4 years ago, all of this came to a point where I said, okay, I've got a lot of marketing, got a lot of public relations, I've got the speaking thing. Podcasting is starting to take off. So started a podcast, went really well. So I thought, I could do this for other people. So launch the Stories and Strategies brand.
What I really heard though is that this is where you make the real money is in podcasting.
It's my life, man.
I had someone ask me
the other day, you're still doing that podcasting? And think, yes. Like it's my oxygen.
Are you still knitting? Are you still doing woodworking? Like, no, actually, this is my gig. This is what I do.
That's right.
Podcasting is stale. Podcasting has run its course. Oh my God. Like it's been around forever. It's like, I'm sure you hear it. I'm sure you disagree with it. Thoughts on it, just even as a medium. And then we'll get into kind of your version and how you play in the world.
There's an article in podnews.net today on how podcasting is starting to kill radio. Not take bites out of radio. It's starting to kill it. And traditional media continues to decline. For podcasting is actually expanding because there's the audio space, which is the classic multitask. Podcast gives you, as a listener, the 25th hour in your day.
Love it. I love that.
You can be on the elliptical, on the Peloton, and listening to a podcast. Guess what? That's a beautiful multitask. That's what
it gives you, the 25th
is.
Hour of your day. I am going to repeat that to somebody today. That is awesome. I fell in love with audiobooks a few years ago using the Libby app to get access to the Calgary Library podcast because I can do it while I'm doing something else. If I have to sit and stop and like watch another thing, and plus, I don't know about you, but at the end of the day, do I really want to fire up another screen? I've been sitting in front of these two big control center things I got going on here. Audio while I'm cooking, while I'm walking the dog, it's such a different way to engage your mind.
See, you and I, it's like we must be separated from a couple of generations because we have a similar mind. My audio is a driver for me. But the other path where podcasts are growing is video.
Yeah.
And it's Gen Z or Gen Z, depending on where you're listening.
And are they watching it on their phone? Are they literally excited? I've never watched a podcast. Okay.
No,
and
they are.
Now we sound like a couple old dudes talking.
We do. Yeah.
I love it. That's okay. Well, hey, admit it. Admit it. I'll embrace it.
Yeah. And Google is seeing this trend. Google,
yeah.
The app, is closing down Google Podcasts at the end of this year and putting all their energy into YouTube.
Well, because that's
so
their,
is
that's
it a
their,
trend?
That's their shiny, yes, horse in the race too, right? That they have. So
it's a beautiful. Yeah, it's a big.
I love it. I love the stallion. Evolution. I love the 25th. It gives you back. It gives you your 25th hour to work content. Talk to me. Like, who do you work with? Like, who are people coming to you going, I've got a harebrained scheme. I wonder, I've been thinking about podcasts. And that's where you really step in and go, let me show you where the landmines are. Let me show you where the opportunities are and let's take you on the journey.
That's exactly right.
Oh, amazing.
But in terms of outreach, I started by trying to market to realtors.
Okay.
Because realtors do tend to have some money. They are in a branding world where they're not just selling their services. They do need to warm people to their brand and to their personal brand. So I started that way. And it's been somewhat effective, but finding a realtor that wants to do that for the long run and doesn't want to turn that into money within the first 3 months is really hard to do.
I put in a quarter and I turned it and a gumball needs to come out the bottom
right now,
like immediately.
So I started that way.
Is it safe to say this is not a quick fix or a quick gratification channel?
I think podcasting is a marathon. And I think the first 6 months... Well, the first month is hard because even if you've got that social media following, I've got 10,000 people following on social, that can translate into 50 subscribers or followers on your podcast. And what you learn is that your brand is powerful on social media because people don't want to spend more than a couple of seconds with you.
Oh, that's good insight. I like that
right?
a lot. That's
they
smart.
Want to stay connected to what you're doing. I give you a like, maybe, which is trending downward. Podcasts are that classic 30-minute, 40, maybe an hour. Those are people willing to do a deep dive with you.
Which is part of the value, right? Because the intimacy of the content exchange. Like they listened. I've met people and they're like, it's kind of weird to meet you because you're usually in my ears while I'm running. And all of a sudden now you're in front of me and I'm not sure how to process it. Because you develop an intimate relationship with the listener, for sure.
Very much. Very much. And I think that is the real power of podcasts, that eventually when you build your audience... I think podcasts work in the middle of the funnel. I don't think they work exceptionally well at the top. I think they help at the top. But in that, I'll go back to the original funnel, interest and desire.
Yep.
Middle part of, the original funnel. I think it pulls people through that. But when you get to action, if you turn to someone who's a regular podcast listener, they feel like they're sitting at the cafe table with you or with you and your guest having a conversation. They feel like a participant. If you suddenly turn to that person and say, hey, you should buy my thing. I realize I'm only at this table so that you can, I'm the one buying the coffee here. That's the only reason you invited me. So I don't think podcasts work at that level of call to action. But if you have a coaching business or you have academies, you hold live events, you have a terrific Facebook community, pulling them through to that part of the action, I think that works for a podcast. So it does work for marketing, but it works more in the middle, and don't lean on it for selling your blue
top
widgets.
Level awareness.
Yeah.
I love it. We always joke, you have a third of a second to get 3 seconds to get 3 minutes. And the way you just described it is kind of that journey.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Like, and I love, like, do you have a 3 second fan base? Which is a great, I love that question. It's around, I have 10,000 followers, but they're 3 second fans. They'll give me about 2 to 3 seconds. If I want to go to the three, which can quickly turn into 30 minutes, that's a different stage of the relationship. And although it might be
clips,
a smaller number, a smaller number though, but there's
this
more
podcast,
valuable. Yeah, 100%. I love it.
When you pull clips for this podcast, you pull that clip of you explaining that. Because that's exactly right.
I love that. So it just never hit me as clear as you just said, like that 10,000 followers, those are 3 second followers. And that's okay, but you're asking for a different level of commitment from the audience or from
Absolutely.
Your fans or from your potential future customer, which, and I'm in the consideration phase, if I'm in B2B and I'm in comparison, I'm willing to go way deeper and I want the fine print. When I'm first cruising by, I don't have to. Yeah. too fast, too soon. Don't go in for the kiss. I'm not ready yet. Take it easy.
So this is like working out. If you're all you're doing is lifting the heavy weights, you're focused on growth, right? Terrific. You're doing no toning, right? You are not chiseling your body. And if you're only focused on doing massive reps with lighter weights, where's the growth? So you need both in your marketing plan. You do need those social media followers who are in the very shallow end of the pool. And you need people that can swim in the deep end of the pool as well. That's a big, robust brand.
And giving them something to swim in or along with, or however we want to pull that metaphor forward.
Yeah.
What in your, like, what have you found? Biggest source of success, biggest source of, I don't want to use the word failure, but becoming disenfranchised with the idea. So if someone says, I'm going to do it. The ones that are going to be successful have thought this or done this. The ones that are, you're like, oh, because I don't know about you, but sometimes I sign on a client. I'm like, oh, this might be against my best judgment. I don't think this is going to work out because there's signs already.
Yeah.
Do you have a little bit of like something you can, stuff you can throw out there?
Two. I think it comes down to two main avenues. And one I've already mentioned, the one who, despite everything I've said in the preamble, that this is going to take time, that the first 6 months you're going to be thinking, why did I do this again? Because it's a lot of work, despite what our company can take off your plate, which is, that's the whole MO of the company, is to take all
the... make it easy for you, because...
Absolutely.
It takes way more time than... people like, oh, it's just the hour you record. I'm like, oh, that's the easy hour. That's the fun part. That's the easy part. That's the easy part.
Yeah, that's showtime. That's just... 100%. That's so simple. The rest is... It's about 6 hours to produce one 30-minute episode.
I love, we're between, you know, when we can take into consideration like pushing it live, doing all the creative, promoting it, sticking behind it, it's 6 to 8 hours kind of all in for us.
And 100%. The planning.
I love that you said six, because I've looked at it many times, and that's efficient. That's with a team who's been doing 400 of them is really good at pumping it out, probably much like your team. There's no shortcut to it. And if you're going to do it, don't do it super half-assed, because that's a reflection of your brand. Like that's totally. That's a non-negotiable in my mind. Like do it right, well, whatever that means to you. Don't tell me you're the brand that is all about the details and all about quality and then have a podcast recorded on a poor mic on your iPhone. Like, no. Oh, so you're not really the brand you said you were either. You have to be so careful with that.
Yeah, and you're not that interesting. You know, that's the bottom line. You think I can just love go it. On the podcast, ad lib, record using crappy microphones or, as you said, on your phone because I'm just so darn good. No, you're not. You're not nearly that
and
good.
And you're in a world where there's a lot of people doing this that are that good.
So it's the folks that through the process of doing it realize they are not committed to the podcast. Okay. And I can see it. I'm thinking of clients in mind right now as we're speaking. And I know when we get to that 6 month mark, because our contracts are 6 months and I do that deliberately because I got to get you through the first 6 months. I know they're not going to stick around because they're not committed to the work ethic that you need to put in to do this.
I appreciate
Secondly,
your honesty.
The ones that want an immediate payoff, they look at me 5 episodes in and say, well, I haven't sold any of my stuff. No one said, okay, I want to buy from you. Well, because you won't. That's not where the podcast works. I repeat myself. I don't do that. But it's not where the podcast works. I think also... changes that people experience either in their profession or in their personal life that happen, unforeseen things that knock them out. And then lastly, folks who they idolize probably a certain podcaster or more likely someone they've seen on TV. I had one client a couple years ago. She loved Oprah. I love Oprah. Mm-hmm. Lots of people.
A lot
love
of people
Oprah.
Love Oprah.
she really, really felt she could be Oprah Winfrey on her podcast. She felt amongst her circle of friends that she had that charisma, and I'm sure she does. But when it came time to translating that through the microphone, being able to do it, the editing was all good. She agreed the production value was good, but she was not very good.
Okay.
And she felt terrible about it.
And she recognized it.
She recognized it. Yeah. And that creates an ugly situation because she didn't want any of it to go to air. Meantime, putting it to air is kind of the last thing my company does. It's the last click of the mouse. We've done all the work. So it creates this awkward, well, I still got to send you an invoice.
We still did that. Yeah. That's
yeah.
Tricky. Yeah. That's tricky.
So those are the ones that quit. The success points are the ones, well, just in talking to you and how you understand podcasts and where they fit. I could tell if you came to me cold or someone like you with your personality came to me cold, I could tell, oh no, that's going to stick.
Thank you. We're going to have some fun here. We're going to rock it. How many episodes should you go live with? Do you have 3 recorded, 4? I've heard different versions of this. Like the value of a library is because if somebody likes it and they're curious and they want to have more, having one, ooh, you miss an opportunity. Do you have is there a magic formula for you, a number?
I don't. I think it comes down to the client because I have clients that want to do a very soft launch on their podcast. They want to feel their way through it. In your first episode, is and should be
it's your first episode
it's you can't start with perfect and get better from there. It just doesn't work. So your first episode will be your worst, and don't put all that pressure on yourself. I do like launching with 3.
Yeah, that's always been my kind of like rule, imaginary rule of thumb, if you will.
The benefit to that is, as you say, if you have a following who decides to check you out, they have a choice. They can see a launch with 3 that you're into it. Hopefully you've published your trailer in advance, mm-hmm. which is, you know, works as a teaser, I guess, if nothing else. The downside to the benefit maybe to the 3 is people will just listen more to episode 3 than they will to episode 2 or 1 in the short form because it comes up last. And most recent
when it comes up last comes up first. Yeah.
In the act.
First. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So gotcha. You'll find that to begin with, episode 3 is the one people latch onto, and you publish that way, knowing that episode 1 is probably your worst. But over time, when you and I recorded on my podcast, you mentioned that when you got to 50 episodes in your catalog, it changed that suddenly the attention wasn't on just the new episode that you'd published.
Yeah.
But at least half your downloads were coming from your library. That's exactly right. For me, it's about 70% of my...
Yeah, we're up around probably mid-60s, usually 63 to 65% of when I do the numbers on it, and that's with 420 episodes.
And because you create a lot of evergreen content, which is what a podcast should be.
And it gets ranked. And we also do roundups. So we'll take top female leader podcasts, top clean tech podcasts, top VC podcasts, and we'll put them into groups of 6 or 8, and then we'll share that out on a monthly roundup newsletter. Like, hey, you know, local, you know... And all of a sudden, like, I'll be shocked at how many episodes from 2 years ago are still getting downloads, but they're part of roundups of like, we've got all this content. And just remember, just because you've promoted it 10 times, there's 1,000 people that have never seen it once. So it's always new to somebody, and don't miss the opportunity to put it out there. So we started doing the roundups probably around 100, 150. We're like, hey, we've got all this old content that's getting lost in the back of the dusty library. Let's bring it forward. So that was a success metric for us that really allowed us, because a lot of the stuff is timeless. It's deeper conversations about specific subject matter in relation to the Western Canadian economy. Some of it's like news and noteworthy. Most of it is just somebody sharing a story about an industry or a sector that you can learn from that is probably, even if it's a year old, it's not outdated. We got a lot of value with sharing the roundup strategy for us.
And just so people can visualize this in context, let's say your newest episode is typically going to get 1,000 downloads in the first 7 days. And when you first start, it's probably 40 or lower. So 40 downloads. What we're talking about is your catalog. It could be you get 2 downloads a day on old episodes. And as you grow, it's 20 downloads a day on your old episode. It's all percentage based. I had this really weird 6 months with my catalog where for about 6 months, there was one episode in the catalog that would get about 30% of the day's downloads. Like out of nowhere, I'd get 400 downloads on this episode from 3 years ago. And then a few days later, an entirely different old episode would get 300 downloads. And I'm like,
what's going on? Yeah.
Is this bots that are, I can't say bots are impossible in podcast world, but it's not like a website where you get these.
Yep.
It has to be somebody pushing something to make it happen. The only thing I found out was there were 2 universities in the States that had included our podcast in their curriculum, public relations courses.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's included unbeknownst to you.
Yeah. And I found USC was one of them. And I found out later, got in touch with the professor that was including it in the curriculum. She asked me for some transcripts. So, and I never did point blank ask her, is this why I'm seeing these?
Yeah.
But that is the only thing that makes sense to me, that some learning institution that included it as part of the must listen.
Well, and the value here for anyone listening, thinking about their own podcast, the evergreen, you use that word, it sticks around. Like the value of an old podcast episode, like I'm always impressed, like you're putting something out there to the world that has value today and possibly for a year, years to come. That is powerful from a piece of content perspective, especially as we were talking about earlier. I'm on my phone and whatever goes through my feed is gone. I'll probably never see it again on Instagram or whatever the case may be. But this, it gets indexed on search. You can share it out with your audience. Other people can find it, love it, share it there. There is a bit of a longer tail that can get created, which is part of, like you said, the value of sticking with it beyond seven episodes.
And I love that this career that I've chosen, where I have this title podcast producer now, it's so weird. You go around and I'm an engineer. Well, no, I'm a general physician. I'm a podcast producer. And it just, that sort of sticks out to people. There are other podcast producers in Calgary for sure, but there's not a ton of us. And most producers are in the US.
Okay.
And the reason I love doing this from Calgary, because US listenership is probably the strongest in the world.
Right.
There's an argument that Australians are now listening per capita.
Okay, statistically. Oh, cool.
Yeah. I Aussies have really caught on to this. Canadians are coming along, but it's mainly in Toronto.
Okay.
I would really love for Albertans to latch on stronger.
Doug, I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best.
You are rocking it, but admittedly, Albertans are not quite where US podcast listeners
are. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah.
The benefit is with my American clients, there's no taxes for me to charge on any of my invoices. That's part of free trade. So when they work with me here in Canada, it costs them less. A, my prices, I charge them in American dollars,
right,
but my prices are lower than other US production houses. I don't have any overhead. I'm completely virtual. My entire team is scattered across Canada and one in Greece.
That's awesome. How big's your team? What's this cohort look like to do this thing?
We are, it's five people. The other four are, none of them is a full-timer.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
One of them is a half-timer now. And boy, I've hummed and hawed, looked at numbers. How do I turn that into full-time?
Yep.
Would it work for them? I'm so close. And do they have the skill sets to cover all the things I need them to do if I hired them full time? Because I would just, from a practical standpoint, have to cut back on some of the contractors. Mm-hmm. So I need them to cover that full suite of things. And that's an awful lot to ask of one person. So I'm not quite there to hire a full-timer.
At the end of the day, we still have to balance and run the business, right?
Cash flow, yeah.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
That is a goal for the business, is within 2 years, I have another full-timer. And then just keep adding on from there. But
fabulous.
Editors.
And how many years have you been doing this for, Doug?
4 years.
Nice. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
And it's, you know, and are you seeing more interest? Like, is there a certain sector? You talked about realtors initially. Is there certain sectors or verticals or however you want to slice it up? Are you seeing like, oh, wow, I'm getting some calls from this sector, the B2B industrial sector or the ag sector? Is there anybody that's on the rise right now that's just kind of catching your attention?
And it applies to all, but investors.
Okay.
Mainly in the US. So in being an investment guru in whatever sector, whether it's self-storage investment, real estate investing, general investing, investors are—
And you're really seeing the niche, like you said. Like,
well, they
self-storage investor was an interesting, like that was very specific.
Yeah, well, because I have a client that—
I felt
that
you were pulling from a roster in your mind.
Absolutely does that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's anyone who wants to be the guru, the thought leader for their specific niche. And investors is perfect because, similar to realtors, they're in a world where they must create content. The ones that get it.
Yeah.
You know, they have to create content. That social media is terrific, but social media engagement universally is declining in engagement. Fewer people are liking on
content.
Facebook. Yeah. TikTok is, you know, is terrific, but again, engagement.
I resist because I don't need another thing to fight me for my attention disorder. Do I call it the self-storage investment podcast? Like, from a naming perspective, do you get super blatant, super upfront, like in
That's
your face?
Awesome.
And don't get too creative about it.
That's so awesome. boy, what a question. So I'm The answer is it depends, which is such a frustrating answer.
That's fair.
It depends on what kind of audience you already have. I would much prefer that you have a sizable audience that you're going to pull to the podcast, in which case we don't need to rely on SEO quite as much.
Okay.
But inevitably, what people are doing is going into the apps and punching in investing and finding your podcast.
Yeah.
Or niching it and saying self-storage investing. So the perfect SEO title for that podcast is the Self-Storage Investing Podcast, which is the actual title of the podcast.
Okay, amazing. All right. So that was, that's such a, even as, you know, being a marketer, sometimes we get too cute for our own good. Sometimes you just got to be crystal clear, especially from a search perspective, because what's your audience going to look for?
Well, let me bounce this off of you.
Sure. So,
first, quickly, my company is called Stories and Strategies. The fact I tag on podcast productions is for SEO and to make it just like bang head clear.
Well, there's a point before people know what Stories and Strategies mean, you have to teach them. So it's part of you teaching them, right?
Stories and Strategies is a life philosophy for me. That
nice. I like
that. Everything is strategy. And quite frankly, story is the strongest tool with which to execute the strategy as a human.
Boom. Quote that, pull that out, put that up on the wall at Doug's house. That's awesome, man.
So Stories and Strategies is a raison d'etre for me. Podcast Productions clarifies what my company does.
Yep.
I called my podcast Stories and Strategies. It was growing. It was doing well. I nuanced the title to Stories and Strategies for Public Relations and Marketing. Boom. Up went the downloads.
Yep.
So
because you got more clear, you let me know. You let me know who I am and whether I would care.
Only ever call it Stories and Strategies. The only thing on my shirt says Stories and Strategies. The only thing on my banner that's behind me says Stories and Strategies. So that's all I ever reference it. But for SEO purposes, I'll put Stories and Strategies. And then the four.
Yeah, which I love that.
But let me ask you, someone made the point to me recently that we maybe shouldn't, number one, appealing for SEO appeals to the algorithm, doesn't necessarily appeal to the human eye. Mm-hmm. But their point was, why are we fighting this SEO battle when we comparatively are minnows compared to podcasts led by NPR, Wondery, CBC?
Yep.
CBC is a behemoth in Canadian podcasts, Canada Land. They're still going to win the SEO battle. In fact, even if I called my podcast Stories and Strategies Podcast Productions and somebody searched Stories and Strategies Podcast Productions, amazing. I should come up number one.
Right, but I understand.
I might not.
But when you changed and added it to for marketing and PR professionals, you said it there was a direct improvement.
It did. There's no doubt about it. My downloads went up. There's no doubt about it. It had impact. But the point that this person was making to me was, how much juice do you want to give that concept? Because you're still not going to win the SEO search, because the bigger entities are still going to come up number one because the algorithm is deliberately skewed in their favor. Do you find that as well? Do you agree with their perspective?
Again, it depends. It depends, Doug. That's a valid question, but it depends. Even if you took SEO aside and like just park that concept, Stories and Strategies, I could come up with five different things that might mean, right? But I'm like, for marketers and PR, I'm like, okay, it draws me in a little bit closer. You know, like, you're in the storytelling business, which means, well, you tell children's stories. Oh, what do you tell? Do you do investor relations? Could mean anything. So the need to specify, I don't think is only an SEO requirement. I do think it's a human requirement. I think you can get really tripped up in speaking in Google speak and in SEO speak. But I think the first question is, okay, this is us being really clear of who. What's our offering? What's our, you know, what's our MVP or our MLP, our most lovable product? Who is the ICP, our ideal customer, in this case, our ideal listener profile? What set of messages will unite those two together? And that's where we often live as a marketing company. Once we've identified that, then you start thinking about how that might play on SEO, on a billboard, on a business card, on a sponsorship that you're doing at an event for PR and marketing professionals. And SEO just becomes one of the things you need to think about, but it shouldn't be the first thing, because it can skew you down the wrong path. So that's, I agree with them, but think it was oversimplified by just saying, oh, I don't think about that. Get the messaging right to unify what you offer and who you want and who you believe will care about it. Once that's right, then figure out how it's going to show up in different channels.
That's another audiogram right there. That's beautiful.
That's how I would think about it. Because as soon as you start leading with one channel, it becomes the bully, and then you lose sight and trip over some of the other ones. Messaging first, customer is what matters, offer is what, here's what I do and why I think people care about it. Here's the people that I think care about it. Let's message that. That's our job. Like that's clear motive. It's the formula that I have a motive about my product and my offering. That customer has a motive they're trying to fulfill with is a need or an outcome or an actualization. Our job is to unite the two in the middle. So it's always been this imaginary formula of mine of like, it's the middle space. That's where we live.
And how do you keep that in front of you all the time? Because that's build the plan, execute the plan.
Yeah.
Awesome. But how many times have you built the plan, shelved it, and proceeded?
With our clients, very little. With ourselves, that's a different story for another day. That's how honest we get. No, the reality is doing that positioning work first, doing that messaging hierarchy, really getting clear on who the ICP. Remember, we were chatting earlier and I mentioned we did a product offering specifically. We're typically a full service agency. So we do a lot of needs, assessment, custom solutions, build it out. We said, you know what? Let's test this. Let's build a product for ourselves. Our first thing was, who's the customer? The second thing was, and the thing we built was exactly what we did for ourselves. What's our offering? Let's get really like you get these five features and these five things. Part of our job with these companies, we'd go in and talk to a mid-tier industrial company that had 50 SKUs and 40 different client groups. We said, let's pick one SKU and let's pick one ICP. One that you've had success with, but you want to grow in other markets, you need to defend against a competitor. Let's push everything else away and be disciplined enough that we're focusing on one-to-one relationship, and let's go to market with a campaign that's only trying to do one thing. And then the strategy drove everything. So in that case, because it was so clear versus like, it's our brand and it's everything that we do. And that's when it gets the trickiest because there's so many stakeholders internally, externally, product-wise. If you do create a one-to-one relationship and be very clear on the plan, it's so much easier to execute and measure whether it's succeeding or not. Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer.
Amen.
To
hey, no, I loved
is,
it.
This is your. I'm talking to you now. You're doing the thing, Doug. You're flipping the guest back on me here. I get what's happening here. I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker.
But I loved it.
Thank you. I appreciate.
And your listeners
want to
know you as well. They like your guests, but they listen for you, man. You're the glue.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
You are the light that the moths fly to.
Then get burned up and die because it's some kind of weird mating ritual. I don't know. Let's not take that one too far. I've watched too much, you know, Blue Planet with what's his name, Attenborough. But I love that you described it as killing radio. I remember when I first started this, my mom's like, "Oh, you're doing a podcast? Cool. What's that?" And I thought about it for a second. I said, "Well, Mom, it's just an old school radio show that you can kind of listen to whenever you want, and where I get to pick the guests and have chats." And she's like, "Oh, that's neat." But it was how I actually described it for in the moment of like, how do I describe podcasting to my 7-year-old mom who's like, I'm really supportive. I have no idea what you're doing. And so to hear you saying that it's actually killing and eating radio alive, fast forward 5 years, what are we going to see? Like, how is that actually, are all the radio companies just going to get into podcasting and pivot? What's
they already
happen?
Are.
Yeah. Good answer.
A point to the Chorus Network. Right now, the Chorus Network, they're ramping up their podcasts. Every talk show that they've got is turned into a podcast. They're repurposing their content.
I'm seeing it even on the radio that I do listen to. They're like, tune into our podcast if you missed the thing. Like, it's all the time.
Yeah. You're right. Well, in the next five, and what they're doing is just repurposing what they're already creating. In the next 5 years, you're going to see video really becoming dominant with that. It's because of the growth of YouTube.
Yeah.
So increasingly, these radio stations won't be simply doing this is on the radio. They'll be live streaming it every time on their YouTube channel and actively driving people to their YouTube channel and to YouTube Music, which is like a live podcast. I think with generative AI, you're going to see not only tremendous repurposing of content, like out the you think you're bombarded by messages today promoting things. Oh my God.
The scope and scale of the
holy
of what,
crap. So the smart ones will create a refuge from the noise. And I think that's another way that podcasts are going to grow in the next 5 years, because when I put in my earbuds, that's it. I make the selection. I trust when I listen to Collisions YYC, it's me and Tyler and whoever me and Tyler are hanging out with.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
that day.
Trust. So the trust and the authenticity.
For that half hour, that hour, right? It's their refuge from the noise. It's me time, safe space. Radio stations need to tap into that. Mm-hmm. Their sales are already all going digital. I run an ad campaign for one provincial-wide company, and we leaned heavily on radio because I'm not a huge banner ad guy. I'm evolving. I'm turning from Neanderthal on banner ads to Cro-Magnon. I'm a little more positive in the idea that when people see a banner, as annoying as they are, we are conditioned to, let me click on that on my phone. And so
let's not blame the banner. Let's blame the companies that don't put effort and energy into the right message for the right customer, which makes for shitty banners. Because they're cheap and they're throwaway, so we'll do a half-assed job. That's right. The problem.
So
it's not the medium is not the problem. The execution is the problem.
And these radio stations that we started with, I think it was about 80% of expenditure was going to the radio stations. That was my design. Mm-hmm. And I cut back on what had been their legacy newspaper spend. Because, newspaper.
Yeah.
it is what it is.
But what I'm hearing you say is quickly, that's going to be radio.
And I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
Radio has always been the gnat.
What is it? If you're around long enough, you eventually see yourself become the villain. Isn't there a Marvel saying or something like that?
Oh, that's beautiful. and it is. So now the radio stations are all turning to digital offerings. They're begging me to join their digital offering. And the problem is we already work with a terrific individual. An entrepreneur helps us with our digital campaign, leveraging Google Performance Max. And,
yep.
And we're having success. So to this client and this client's board, we're producing numbers, and not just in urban Calgary and Edmonton, or let's say urban Red Deer, Medicine Hat, Lethbridge, and Fort McMurray. We call all of those urban. They must appeal to rural as well, equally as much. And we're showing that the digital campaign that we've launched using Google Performance Max and other parts of a good digital campaign, it's having rural impact. 56% of the clicks on their website, they have a particular CTA.
Yep.
56% of their CTAs in the 2023 campaign were from rural areas. Rural meaning not Red Deer, not Fort McMurray,
meaning,
not Medicine.
Yeah, meaning rural, truly rural, not
so
just
the idea
not just
that
smaller
digital
centers.
Working in rural Alberta, right? The last one to kind of get it.
Yeah.
It's working. So we're migrating away from radio. And to further that, radio is getting killed here. I work with a voiceover artist in Toronto, and I mean, she makes her living doing voiceover. And her comment to me just a couple of days ago by email, radio is dead, quote, end quote. That is her professional experience in Toronto, the mecca of radio.
Totally.
And it all comes down to corporations are folding up, and we're seeing it's not just radio that's dying. It's TV. Yeah. TV is not dying yet.
The whole model is shifting. It's a
bit winded. Yeah. And the whole on demand concept, the digital concept that we're going to be going to our phones, and the generative AI, the next wave is Gen AI is going to create audio, which it already can, that you and I are going to listen to, and no human has ever spoken on it. And that's a coming. And I would love to put on my old fedora and say, well, that'll never work. Because there's no way people are going to know the emotions of real humans. The problem with it is Gen AI is scary good.
I know. And it's as bad as it's ever going to be right now. Like, it's only up from here, right? I know. Yeah.
It's frightening. And then the next wave after that is compelling video. Mm. So we become prompt engineers. We learn.
And even that, I was reading yesterday, you know, now where that's highly valued, that's going to, as the systems and platforms themselves get better, the ability to, the skill of prompting will go down, and you can just be like grunts and wheezes, and it'll figure out what you need and give it to you.
4 years ago, when I started the podcast business, I hired several editors, folks I knew and trusted. They not only edited the audio, they could edit the video, they could put together promos. The editors were my prime thing. Mm-hmm. As time has progressed, the editors have less and less to do.
Interesting.
Right? Now it's...
I know, because Cast Magic or whatever platform you use, Otter.ai, will spit out the summary and summarize the highlights and give you the buzz phrases and a little bit of tuning, and they're good to go.
Yeah. And now I've grown up professionally as a writer, I can take something that Gen AI has produced and I can turn it into decent writing, or at least I think it's decent writing.
Yep. Of course.
When I'm training.
But you're starting at 80%, not starting from zero. Like you're already getting a piece of content that's 50 or 60% of the way there. So your time and your volume increases and the amount of resources you need decreases.
And it's how well I instruct the AI to produce. So whenever I want something written in AI, I mean, one little tactic that I do is to tell it to make the first sentence short and compelling, because that's always good writing. So Russian space authorities are troubled. That's just decent writing, because it's why are they troubled?
Yeah, the Ukrainian PR Amre, the evolution of royal PR. I'm on your podcast right now. So
look, yeah, yeah.
No, how do you get the hook? And you know, and even I've seen on LinkedIn the amount of how you need to be almost clickbaity in your first couple lines to get that attention now. It's getting worse.
That's not new.
It's just amping, I find.
1986, when we went to college to learn broadcasting, we had a whole course on how to write that first short compelling line to clickbait it.
It's the third of a second to get 3 seconds to get 3 minutes. It's the third of a second.
There.
It's so interesting. I love your passion and your experience in the industry and how you've kind of channeled towards this. So where does the small podcaster show up in the next couple of years? The me and yous of the world. Let's just put you and I in the bucket. We're not CBC. We're not NPR. We're not under all those. Is there still space?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Nice.
Because CBC can't niche.
You can't see him right now, but he's vibrating in his chair.
Absolutely. Podcasts, they have a rebellious nature. So once listeners become aware that something is network produced, they're looking for independent. It's in their very nature to do it. Increasingly, society as a whole, Western society anyway, as a whole, is driving toward the micro benefit for me. I must have a micro benefit for me before I give you not the third of a second and maybe not the 3 second, but within that 10 seconds, I want micro benefit for me. Your social media is created that way. So the ability to niche your audience is incredibly powerful, and that's the room for the smaller podcaster. So for example,
love it.
If a Vancouver, and I mentioned, you know, I focused on realtors early on, lots of great clients that are realtors. If they wanted to do a podcast on Vancouver real estate, terrific. There are podcasts that are doing that and they've got a chunk of the market already. What makes yours different? And one example would be, let me bounce this off you as a title. How about therapy for Vancouver real estate? What does that convey to you?
I don't know, but I'm curious enough and I'm curious by nature. So I'm like, I don't know because I'm overwhelmed and I can't find a house, or I'm in the game and I'm stressed out. And I immediately goes to what is happening because of the craziness of Vancouver Raids Point. I need therapy. That's where my brain goes. Okay. Quick. I would listen to the first 2 minutes, and if it hooked me, I would keep listening.
Yeah. Or read the short little bio.
Oh yeah, depending on how it shows up.
Does the first sentence?
Let's put it this way: I would click whatever the next step is. I'd probably click on something.
And if it just said Vancouver real estate, meh,
no, blah, right? Too noisy.
Then it comes down to the artwork. How good is the artwork before I give it even a sec?
Well, because you got to still have to a major look, right?
I liken it. A metaphor I use, which is very apt, is when you're scrolling through Netflix at night, when you're trying to turn your brain into jelly and you're not scrolling Instagram reels.
Yep.
And you're looking through Netflix and you haven't got a series or a movie or
on the go. Anything, yeah.
Right? What are you looking at? You're looking at the artwork. You're looking at the title. Do I know and like any of the actors? And even if I do, they've been in some crap. Like this Adam Sandler movie that's on Netflix right now, where he's a spaceman.
In a serious role, yeah.
I gave it a chance. I really did, because I really like Adam Sandler. And I know he produced Little Nicky and crap like that. Oh my God, he's produced his Ishtar movie.
Oh no.
It is so bad. You scroll, and I start scrolling forward to see if the movie gets better. And there's this giant puppet spider throughout the whole movie that he's talking to. It's just him and his spaceship talking to a puppet spider. I'm thinking, oh my God, man. Like, how did you look at this script? And I'm gonna
recommend The Artful Dodger.
Ooh.
It's on Disney, and I was doom scrolling you know, what are we? And my wife, exactly to your point, was across the room doing something with a dog, and she's like, "Artful Dodger, what's that? That's a cool title." Didn't really recognize the actors. I was like, "Oh, you know what?" And they and the trailer had this rock and roll music in the background. It was filmed in like probably 1800s Australia, but they had this whole rock and roll, like very modern, very kind of indie rock music on top of it. We're like, "Oh, let's give it a try." But she saw the word Artful Dodger and it caught her curiosity from across the room, like on a 45 degree angle. And it's become our new series. So check it out if you're curious.
I will.
But it was how we got to it. It's exactly what you said. It caught her eye and I was like, "Eh." Then I watched it and I forget what track they used, but it was a fairly current modern music with this old timey setting. And I'm like, "Oh, I love the dichotomy of that. I'm in." And it was kind of gritty and fun. And that became our new series, but that's how it happened. Like wham, wham, wham.
And now imagine if it had a title like the Gritty Fun Series, you never would have watched it.
No,
right. We talked about SEO Dodger? For titles, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So there's where it appeals to the human eye. And a whole bunch of things to unpack from what you just said. That's also a human organic pull there. And ultimately the way to grow your podcast is Tyler says to someone else, "Hey, I talked to Doug and Doug has a podcast called, and you should check it out."
Well, but Doug, we can't underestimate one key factor. Because of what I've watched before was even why I got presented with it in the first place. So there's a whole other layer to that, right? Yeah, yeah. So there was something else, something, Big Brother got it on the screen for me to even respond to.
Right.
But there's a reason why it was number three on the third row to the right. You know, I'll give them a lot of credit for being that deliberate with their placements. So the fact that I've listened to other things or watched other things before that fit that would have contributed to me even having the chance to see it and then get curious.
There's always an algorithm.
Oh, yeah, yes, there is. Yes, there is. Oh, so Doug, we're going down some rabbit holes here, buddy. I love it.
Good stuff.
I love it. I really love your answer to that question of like, absolutely, because of the niche, because of the what's in it for me and giving those micro benefits in those micro moments that a podcast does in an intimate way, better, different than any other platform. Like it is so unique in that way and so powerful for its ability to connect one-to-one. Like my biggest compliment that I love when people say it to me, and I've had it a couple times, if you get it three times, it's a pattern. It felt like I was eavesdropping on two friends chatting. And I'm like, thank you, amazing. Mm. Like, I love it. It feels like, because one, that shows that we're having a good time. And two, it felt like they got something special. And that's a very, very cool gift to give your listener.
Yeah, how intimate for your brand too, the sense of emotion toward your brand in doing that. Because I know a big part of your podcast is creating that stage for others be on. And I think that's so powerful back to your brand.
Thanks, man. It's honestly, it's what gave me permission when all of a sudden I said, wait a second, if I make this about me, this is really intimidating and kind of scary. And like, who am I to top? But I'm like, wait a second, if I'm just curious and it's actually about, you know, make your guest the hero first and your audience the hero second, and eventually you get some afterglow off that. It's also what gave me permission in the early days to even step into the fray of like, oh, I'm going to talk to Fortune 500 CEOs. I had a little bit of imposter syndrome until I went, wait a second, I'm just the curious guy. I'm good. And the permission that it gave me to create that space is what's also what allowed it to work. Just to go back to some people would be like, oh, I don't know. And do I have anything valuable? And like, if you want to do talking head, that's one thing. But if it's about having other people on, it's not about you. And you know, that's a gift.
What's interesting is there are podcast gurus who point out, though, that if your show is an interview show from a metric standpoint, if ultimately you're trying to get your listeners to buy your orange widget, an interview show will be less successful than a solo show. And I do have experience with clients where actually that's the truth.
Okay.
And people are tuning in just to hear them do solos because they are the guru and they may not be right about everything, but they love their perspective and how they approach it.
You know, that's an interesting point.
Yeah. I'm actually just developing a YouTube video that I'm going to put up on what format should your podcast be? And it kind of comes down to interview or no interview. There's more than that. There's narrative podcasts as well, or roundtables. But interview...
I love that you brought that up, and I think to a certain degree, I do not disagree at all. You know, for the raison d'etre, which you said earlier, for me, it was that other version, and the afterglow was what came from it. I do think that, and I've been reviewing this lately after 400 and some episodes. I'm like, is it continuing to add value to the business in the same way that it could? I don't know. So it's funny. I really love it. Let's be transparent and have a good chat. There is a point where I'm like, it doesn't seem to be benefiting as much as it once did, but I still love doing it for the reasons that I do it. But if I look at it one-to-one to the business, I don't know. And that might be what's actually, I need to start going out and doing a little bit more talking. Because even when I put up posts on my LinkedIn where I'm speaking or I'm doing events or I'm doing something, they get great engagement. So there's a lot of truth to what you said. I think you gave me some good things to think about after the show.
You know, Tyler was on, for the listener, Tyler was on my podcast, in which case, you know, the mic was reversed. I was asking the questions. Tyler was doing the talking and offering the clips that click. Go listen to that episode. If you listen to Tyler on this podcast and you hear him talking with guests, he interjects with his thoughts. That episode is a chance for Tyler to just unwind and go. And it's a chance to really get to know you. So that is important for your audience to learn about your thoughts and your approach to things. Because I thought in that episode it was very revealing. And the clips were amazing.
I appreciate it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. Because you're right. In the way that I've created Collisions YYC and the way it really worked for me wasn't about making me the hero at all, which in the world of elevating yourself of to the level of expert in a certain field or a certain discipline for a certain audience to solve a certain set of problems, it doesn't lend as well to that for sure. But it's a great way to grow your audience very quickly.
We share that life philosophy. I don't want to be, I suppose psychologically, I am the hero of my own life story. I suppose we all are, not to go down the rabbit hole, but I don't want that to be my outward focus. There are people who do, and yep. who do it very, very, very well.
Agreed.
And I admire that, but I'm a different animal from that. And that's where I find you and I are the same.
And I think that what you touched on, when someone's thinking about going down the road of doing a podcast, because it's not just pick a channel and do a thing. There is a personal, like, who are you and which version of you is going to show up in that podcast? So therefore, what type of podcast are you going to do? I should be a talking head, but that doesn't feel right for me. Back to your metrics of what will make someone succeed or fail. Sometimes being pretty honest with yourself, because it's that kind of medium where if you fake it, one, everybody sniffs it out. It's not cool. And one, you won't sustain it. So I do think more than other, like I'm going to post some photos or I'll repost some content, or maybe I'll get a ghostwriter to write an article for me that I'll put out there. Podcasting is different. So find also the honest moment of this is the version of me that I want to be on this podcast. And if it's talking head, great. If it's interviewer, great. If it's social commentator, I do think there has to be an acceptance or an understanding of who you are before you in go down and depart on this journey. Because if not, it just won't work. And the audience sniffs it. Like that was my business partner says, you know, never have our bullshit meters been so highly tuned. You're like, meh, bullshit, I'm out.
you and I don't know this at all, but I'm willing to bet you really like blues music.
I do. I do actually. Yeah.
Keith Richards has a theory on this. Obviously extremely successful.
Yeah.
He doesn't consider himself a great guitarist at all. He talks about weaving. And if you listen to how he and Ronnie Wood play together and the reason that works, he says, you know, individually, neither one of us is probably all that good a guitarist, but together,
oh, I love it.
You can't beat us.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. And he calls it weaving. And if you listen to Stone's music, Beast of Burden is probably the perfect example of that, where neither one of those instrumental pieces is taking a lead role. In fact, the lead is very buried. And when I play it on my guitar, it's almost useless because I need all those other parts to weave in and out.
That's your mic drop moment, right? I'm like, I just felt that. It was like, that was so revealing.
Out of here.
And so bang on, man. It's literally what you and I've been doing for the last like hour and a half.
And Keith knew about it all those years ago.
Amazing. Well, I just haven't done enough drugs. I'm not sure. That's all. Yeah. Anyway, that's an easy Keith reference, Keith Richards reference. Not to demean anything. Very cool. Doug, that was an awesome conversation. What a great way to spend the morning. And, you know, business case and reasonable date aside, it is a fabulous platform to have really good conversations with other human beings, which I love calling it weaving. I'm gonna work that in. That's very powerful. It has been a joy to talk to you, and you've really inspired me on a few different things today and got me thinking, which that's a gift. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. And to your listener, especially the ones who are here at this, you know, this late in the episode,
they've really stuck it in there for us, Doug.
I am
really
so appreciative that you stayed so long, each individual paying attention, that was willing to go that long. That means something personally to me. I really do appreciate it.
And hey, what's the best way for people to say, what's the best way for them to listen to your podcast? What's the best way? If someone wants to reach out and get a hold of you, I always like to ask that because there's a million ways, but what's your preference? Is it LinkedIn? Is it send you an email? What's an open door look like from you?
LinkedIn rocks. That is perfect for me. And it's just Doug Downs. Love and it. Then the website is just storiesandstrategies.ca. There's a fellow in the U.S. that has the .com and he wants $10,000 for it.
Of course he does. That son of a...
I haven't... All right. I'm pursuing the trademark, so that'll be useless for him.
Nice. Well played. Doug, thanks for coming on. Thanks for the good old-fashioned chat and thanks for the insights.
Thank you, sir.